So in this last minute, what can ordinary people do who aren't Congress members, who aren't senators? What difference does it make what actions people take?
I think senators and members of Congress need to hear way more from their constituents about the dangers of what it means for Senate Democrats to give up on this. People should be calling their senators, their members of Congress. People should be showing up to their office. They can go to websites like indivisible.org. They can join their local Working Families Party or DSA chapter. They can nominate a candidate through Justice Democrats. But the number one thing that I think people need to do is call their member of Congress and tell them that they don't think Chuck Schumer is up to the job and they're angry at what his decision was to sell out grassroots Democrats in order to fund and support the Trump government, which they've warned us is an existential crisis to our country.
And Schumer's fear that it would be called the Schumer shutdown, and that a shutdown could even give more power to the executive?
I was so surprised that the federal union representing federal workers said that they were against Schumer's decision on this. These unions don't take these decisions lightly. And so when the union representing federal workers are saying, we are already experiencing a government shutdown, and we need you to fight.
We want to thank you, Waleed Shaheed, for joining us. We'll link to your new article. Schumer says Trump is an existential threat, then surrenders anyway. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at KBOO.FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at KBOO.FM. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at KBOO.FM. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
You're listening to KBOO's All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 4 Special Programming Campaign. Check out all the great special programs we're bringing you now through April 15th at kboo.fm/ATNF4.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM, 90.7 in Portland and streaming via the World Wide Web, KBOO.FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and today is Monday. It is 8:02, and it is also the 17th of March, St. Patrick's Day. So I hope all are well, and in these strange and curious times that we find ourselves living in, it's a challenge. It's a challenge for all of us. But this morning, we want to have a conversation with you and share, just checking in to see how you are and more particular what you are doing. It is so easy, I confess, to be overwhelmed by all that we hear concerning the news, and we'd like to have some conversation this morning about not only the news but also particularly about the last segment, if you heard the Democracy Now! Conversation on the Democratic Senate leader Chuck Schumer, who voted in favor of the continuing resolution, which allows the, should we call it the Musk-Trump government just to go on without apparently much opposition. And what's so tragic about this is the impact wealth continues to have on real people. Before we began broadcasting this morning, I had a conversation with our engineer and probing him to see whether try to make sense of Mr. Schumer's decision. And he wasn't quite sure why, and so he wasn't able to convince me that it was a wise decision. Perhaps you are able to do so, because it seems, I don't know, it seems as if we've given over the keys to the House and let them just do whatever they want to do. So a question that's related is, what is the form of opposition to the president's agenda? I was reminded a few days ago that the Democrats should think of themselves as not the minority party, but as the party in opposition. And so what that means is to say no, no, no. What that means is to say that if this is your agenda, we are not on board with this. And we say no, no, no. And then the question comes, and I'm sure the esteemed senator, senior senator from New York, and, well, 9 other Democratic senators will give you reasons why they voted for the continuing resolution. What we do know is that there are nothing that they seem to be doing to prevent the steamrolling that is happening with the federal government by the Trump administration. The grasp for power, for executive power, without any guardrails or limitations, is certainly threatening to all of us. And I think things that we need to think about in terms of how do we respond to it. I had wanted to come this morning to talk about the issues around the Trump administration, and particularly about what people are doing and what are things that people can do, particularly around the deportations that are happening. Particularly the example, it seems, that the Trump administration is making of institutions of higher education, particularly what's been in the news lately is around Columbia University. The deportation of a student who is active in on campus in opposition to the genocide that is happening, green card carriers married to American citizen, and she is 8 months pregnant. What are we doing? Why are we so silent? What are things that we can do? Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And give us a call if you are interested in talking about how do we respond to these things. Particularly, I'm interested in your reflections on the Democrats, your reflections on Chuck Schumer and the 10 Democrats who decided to go along with the continuing resolution to keep government as we now know it, funding. We can certainly understand people desire for things to be normal, to not allow people to suffer, not to allow those who are most in need to suffer any more harm. The question becomes, though, I believe, is when do we say enough is enough, and what are things we can do? I think many of us are operating under the assumption that things are quote-unquote normal or can return to normal. And in terms of returning to the days of maybe, you know, people like Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill, where you could have disagreements and then settle your disagreement over a scotch and a cigar in the evening and come along. These people from 2010 onward have made it quite clear that they are not concerned about compromise, about the American experience, and indeed, in my words, want to burn the whole house down. But those are some of my thoughts. Let's hear what you have to say. 503-231-8187. And let's hear from Santiago. Share with us some wisdom, sir.
Good morning. So I'm going to share with you a couple definitions here, and then I'm going to talk about what I was going to say. So political party. A political party corresponds to a political consciousness form which represents a specific class within society. Political parties are the most effective vehicles for a class to impact back upon the material base by securing benefits from the means of production for that class, building power for that class, and protecting the interests of that class. Now, when we think about political parties, we only think of it in terms of, like, football teams. Because that's kind of how, you know, if you were born a Republican, if you're born to a Republican household, raised with Republican values, generally you're going to grow up to be a Republican, same as it is with Democrats. So it's almost kind of like we're footballed into what we're believing. But the fact of the matter is that when we strip away the footballification, the sportification of politics, what we're left with is this idea that no matter who has been in power over the last 50 years, while certain things within the imperial core have changed, the outcome for the working class has not changed very much at all. Right. I mean, if you look at, like, production is up. Production has raised over, like, 70% or 80% since, like, the 1970s, but the average wage has only raised, like, 8 to 12%. I mean, what we have to start thinking about is, like, and when you look at political parties through the definition I just gave, it makes sense on why the party that is dedicated to the Democrats who are dedicated to equality and social justice supposedly, and the Republicans who are dedicated to enriching the rich and building up the police state, both still manage to build up the police state and continue to immiserate the working class because they are both bought and paid for by corporations and rich people, they are only securing benefits for the ruling class.
So the
Democrats might manage the working class through social welfare and the Republicans through austerity, but at the end of the day their class interest is aligned with the ruling class.
So we
have to stop pretending that the Democrats care about the working class. I mean, it's so
So you reach a point that I was hoping that you would reach, and I'm thankful for that in the definition of political parties that you gave. So it seems as if any pretense of seeing that they are two dissimilar political parties is just a pretense. It's been unveiled, and both are of carrying the waters for the ruling class.
Yes, absolutely.
So then, how do we move forward?
So here's the other definition I was going to read off. So, because everybody likes talking about political coup right now.
Mm-hmm.
So a coup d'etat is a struggle for state power status between political factions of the ruling class with no intention for changing class relations. Coup d'etat is French for stroke of the state, or more precisely, sudden, decisive exercise of force applied by the state. A coup d'etat is essentially a faux revolution in the sense that power does change hands, but that the ruling class does not change and the mode of production does not shift from one to another. Mm-hmm. So so we have had political coups. The original revolution, the original Revolutionary War was a coup d'etat because black and brown folks and poor white folks, they were the ones who were continually immiserated by the war, but only the yes. oligarchs of the colonial powers were the ones who were beneficiaries of the Revolutionary War in the long run. So if we're going to move forward, then what we have to start talking about is a revolutionary workers' party, stuff that we have had here in the States before. It doesn't have to go by that name. They used to go, they have the, you know, you obviously have the DSA, you have the CPUSA, Communist Party USA, you have La Raza Unida for Chicanos, you've got Party for Socialism and Revolution here in Portland. We also have the African People's Socialist Party and the All African People's Revolutionary Party. The thing is we have to start thinking about, as the working class, how we are going to create political power for ourselves. Okay. How are we going to secure benefits from the means of production for our class interests? Because clearly, the Democrats are only managing our outrage; they're not trying to quell it.
I like that.
At least in the long run. So if we're going to move forward, then we have to start thinking about how we as the working class are going to secure benefits from the ruling class, from the means of production. And the only way that has been shown time and time again, not just here, but around the world, USSR, for example, Cuba, as short-lived as it was, it's about struggle for power.
Okay.
And that comes through direct action, organizing, agitating, educating. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's going to be like planting a tree, even though we're in the middle of a house fire.
Okay.
But we have to be patient. You know what I mean? But I mean, that's the long term
okay.
Revolutionary Workers' Party.
Okay, Santiago, thank you so much, and for lifting up some quite deliberate actions that you suggest. In terms of direct action and raising up the voices of working people. I appreciate your call, and thank you for sharing with us this morning. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. I'm Cecil, and give us a call, 503-231-8187. Our first caller, Santiago, shared some of his thoughts on the necessity of revolutionary struggle and some of his thoughts. Let's hear the opinions of Linda. Good morning, Linda. Thank you for calling and thank you for waiting.
Oh, you bet. It's always good to tune into your show. I do get a little frustrated with Santiago that he's got a wealth of information about history, statistics, but he never provides a solution. And we need solutions. He needs to sit quietly and, you know, spend some time with himself and see how we can step forward. Meanwhile, I've had my boots on the ground as an activist for decades in Oregon, and I'm really open for changing the two-party system, but until we have majorities in both houses of Congress, we can't keep beating that dead horse.
We've got
two parties to work with.
You say we. Okay. Who's we?
We the people, always, sorry. We the people.
So,
and that, you know, our voice is how we do term limit, our vote and our voice is how we do term limits at this point. We need to get majority so that we can overturn that Citizens United. That's number one.
So,
and all of our electeds that are fighting for us are saying the same thing.
So I'm asking you, Linda, how do we do that? How do we do that?
By voting. Okay. By voting, and that's all we have right now. That's our voice and our vote, which I just stated. Okay. It is our only way out, and we only have two parties right now. We can't entertain the thought of three or four parties and ranked choice voting at the federal level until we get majorities in the House.
So I'm asking, Linda, how do we do that? How do you do that?
By voting and be involved in this system. So, I've been a neighborhood leader knocking on doors for decades.
I'm asking because of that, you've been knocking on doors for decades. What are people saying, and why aren't they heeding the pleas you are making, and why do we have the majority?
They promise to vote, and then I get a 66% turnout in my turf, my precincts, that mm-hmm. sort of thing, no matter what county I live in, no matter whether we have Trump as a president or somebody else.
Okay.
People need to vote.
Okay, Linda, thank you.
When I go to town halls, like I did the one with Janelle Bynum and our Senator Ron Wyden yesterday, they both say we need to write letters and call our electeds and tell them what our priorities are. They use that information, and we can call and write letters to people that are staying stuck, like Chuck Schumer.
Right.
We need to speak with him and overturn his ways. He needs to move on.
Okay, thank you so much.
Things that we can do today.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you for your specific thoughts about what we can do today, and specific action in terms of voting and making your voices heard. We appreciate your thoughts and your call, and I appreciate your work. For decades, you said, in terms of reaching out to your neighbors in your neighborhood and urging them to participate in this project called voting. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. I'm Cecil. A couple of calls, one talking about what we can do. What are your thoughts? Let's hear what our next caller has to say. John, good morning. How are you this day?
Oh, I'm letting current events influence me, even though I can't do anything about it. But,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, to put salt in the wound.
Okay.
I was listening to this historian,
uh-huh.
and he was giving the definition of a dictatorship, and that's when the leader disregards the courts and the legislative body.
Yes.
And neither one of the courts or the legislative bodies doesn't do anything about it. And that, when you have, is a full-fledged dictatorship, because you have no opposition at all.
Right.
And I've been hearing how, hamster hair, is going after the courts, actually trying to imprison judges. And then this was before this whole vote was going on, where the Democrats have, you know, given him the keys to the jail.
Yeah.
And that was icing on the cake for me. So if you really look at it, do a little bit of story math problems, whatever, we have 1,376 more days of this. So, this is just starting.
Okay. Well,
and I'm just kind of just giving a little overview of, you know, the situation is really dire.
so let me ask you, you said we have so many days until, and I assume you mean for the Trump administration.
Until 2028 election.
So what do people do between now and then? And why, you know, it sounds as if, and you can respond back to me, it sounds as if, okay, we'll sit back and see what happens, you know, we'll wait until, you know, 3.5 years and we can vote again. I think damage will be done unless we're doing action in the meantime. What are your thoughts?
Well, that's what the United States Senate has done. They're just sitting back.
Well, so what is our response?
Well, there's a positive thing going on, at least from the House of Representatives, going to the red districts, to the people, the area that is totally Trump company, you know, in cahoots. Go down there and have a town hall meeting, you know, this guy named Mark Polkan, and you have a couple, a handful of other people. The DNC chairman, I think he's kind of has a pretty good strategy going. Just go talk to the people.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, because you've seen on TV about the Republican congressmen and politicians going, and they're just getting, wow.
Right, yeah.
You know, they're catching all kinds of hell.
I appreciate that. You know, sometimes we aren't aware of the obvious, and you made an obvious solution. You know, go and speak and go to those town halls.
It is all about the people,
yeah.
You know.
Hey.
And, you know, and see all these horrible things are happening from these weather events. I mean, the Western North Carolina got hit by the hurricane last year. It's still suffering. They haven't got one penny from FEMA. Well, FEMA's no more.
Well, yeah, I'm good. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
You see what I'm trying to say?
Hey, thank you so much. We need
Bye-bye.
To move on. And thank you so much for encouraging us and reminding us of we need to do make action. Let's hear what Tuasi has to say. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, you know, I was watching the Senate as they roll over, and it reminded me of a previous time that it happened, right? Because this, for people with a longer memory, then we've seen this sort of thing before.
Mm.
And maybe you can help me remember, because Chuck Schumer, he's just the latest guy. Was it Tom Daschle, or was it Harry Reid?
Oh,
I think it was 2008,
mm-hmm.
when all three branches of government, of the legislative and the judicial and the presidential, were all, or rather the House, the Senate, and the executive were all in the blue.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they still rolled over. And I think it was on cuts to food and it's like maybe, I think they hurt the farmers or somebody. I can't remember exactly who they were.
Yeah, wait, I need to. I can't remember, but go ahead. Yeah,
I mean, it's been like 25 years now, so or 20 years. But anyway, it just the concept that we're going to somehow vote these solutions into place is utterly ridiculous.
Okay.
If you look with a longer view, over and over again, when it comes to even when we're holding all of the cards,
yes.
Remember the torture report when that came out, Abu Ghraib, there's all of this evidence about who's responsible for doing these human rights violations.
Right.
And rather than taking any action, the people who we, quote, put in power to represent us, turned a blind eye to human rights violations.
So let me ask you, so what do you think we should do right now?
Well, the obvious solution is to go to the most vulnerable people and make sure they're safe.
Mm.
Because
yes.
We all know that fascism attacks the most vulnerable first.
Yes.
People who are concerned about voting or creating workers' parties, I'm sorry, but you don't give a flying care about the people in society who are really suffering.
Right.
Because the people who are really suffering are at the absolute bottom, and they're currently being taken away.
Thank you.
They haven't come to you yet, and that's why you want to vote the problem away.
Mm.
But if you really care, you'll go to the people who are currently being taken away and protect them. And I say this as a descendant of Jewish ancestry. So,
thank you so much, and for reminding us to look for the most vulnerable. Thank you. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and let's go to Lenita. Good morning, Lenita.
Hey, good morning, Cecil. How are you?
I am well. How are you? What are your thoughts?
I am encouraged by the resiliency of the American people. The fact that Senator Chuck Schumer had to cancel his book tour.
Oh, we're having
constituents from his vote to push forward the Republican budget.
Okay. We're having some difficulty, Lenita. Try again. Okay, could you call back? We're having some difficulty hearing you. Okay, thank you. Sorry for that. In the meantime, let's go to Dave. Good morning, Dave.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes, we can hear you. Yes.
Okay, I'm coming at this a different way. When I talk about Big Pharma, it doesn't mean the local drugstore person that works, you know, at the drugstore. It's the top big people in Big Pharma that make a lot of decisions about their medicines and stuff like that.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like on TV, there will be like 25 ads like for Ozempic and these drugs. Not one of them goes after the cause of what people's problems are. It just treats the symptom and it gets by. But why we don't go, why, and these big pharma, remember, not the local drugstore, right? Big pharma. They do not want you to go and even figure out what the cause is of all these.
Sure.
Because if you do, you're going to run into big corporations like Kraft, Exxon, Monsanto.
Okay. Those are interesting thoughts, a little bit off of what we want to focus on this morning, but I think it's helpful, and I'm grateful for you, your observation about Big Pharma and how it is one of those things we should be aware of, and certainly in terms of industries, in terms of how it is impacting ordinary people's lives. I appreciate your reflections on its concern. It's not about your individual pharmacist, but around the big corporations around that. So those are issues that continue to impact us, as our callers reminded us, that we are indeed in a crisis, and what are ways in which we can respond to that. We've had various callers, various responses. One caller, I think our initial caller, was sharing some of their thoughts around the need to organize, and in terms of looking at organizing politically, organizing your communities in terms of taking political action, and they shared some thoughts of political revolutionary groups who created the action. Another caller called and shared some of her thoughts about needing, well, that's that, and these are my words, that may be okay, but we really need to put our feet on the ground and actually go and talk to people in the neighborhoods and actually speak to them and hear their concerns and organize them. That's something that continues that is important and that we should do. We may not have the option of waiting, as one caller mentioned, and he probably has a calendar, how many days for this administration. We probably don't have 1,300 days to wait, because indeed, as if we wait until the next election, too many people are suffering. As a caller mentioned, it is important to notice those who are most vulnerable, those who are suffering, those who are right now are the recipients of the poor recipients of an action of a government that do not care about people. I mentioned earlier about the actions that the administration is doing in terms of deportation and in terms of rounding up people and continuing to separate families and loved ones. And the need, I think, for people to respond. How do we respond, and what are things we can do? And I go back to a caller who mentioned the necessity to look for those individuals and communities who are most vulnerable right now, who are being rounded up, those communities who do not have voice. And so a question I have for all of us generally, those of us who at least are citizens of the United States, for what it's worth, what is it that we can do to either, I don't want to say preserve democracy because that sounds somewhat esoteric right now, but what can we do to protect those who are most vulnerable, those who are at risk because of who they are? There are so many vulnerable populations, those who are people without documentations, children, those who are poor, those who are living on the streets, those who are trans, children. What are we doing? What can we do to notice, to affirm, to protect, and to organize? We've had several callers who shared their thoughts about who we are and what we can do. What are you doing? What can we do to preserve, if that's possible, or create community that enables, that empowers people to do what they need to do? In a time when there is so much disruption and so much confusion, I think a caller hinted at there are things that people are doing in communities all around us that we can look and see. How people are creating community, who are defending the vulnerable, who are defending themselves. There are many ways in which people are organizing in their communities, organizing in their schools, and doing things to educate ourselves and protecting ourselves. So as this administration, the Trump administration, continues to do what I consider to build the police state, what are things that we can do directly? An initial caller mentioned direct actions. Well, what are things we can do about that? Another caller mentioned attending town hall meetings of congressional and local representatives. That's where we, ordinary people, can begin to address those who are our legislators, those who are the public officials, and at least those who are elected or appointed. I don't know what we do about in terms of this semi unofficial Orwellian operation called DOGE that is not an official department of the government and has no authority. I don't know how we respond to that, but there are things that we can do in terms of organizing our communities. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And give us a call and let's hear what you have to say about how we make this ship correct. Let's go to our next caller, Alone. Good morning.
Yes, hello, and not to be confused with a billionaire. My name is spelled with an A.
Okay.
Good morning, and first of all, thank you for hosting the show and also for your good work over many decades in the fight for justice, equality, human rights. So thank you personally. Okay. You know, what's happening is so overwhelming, and every day there's so much bad news. You know, we're kept running from one crisis to another, from one scary decision by the arsonist and racist and hooligans in power. Personally, as somebody who's been involved in environmental and peace groups since my youth, I redouble my efforts locally right now. I'm involved with a group called Healthcare for All Oregon. We're trying to get universal healthcare here. Also with groups trying to stop Zenith Oil and PGE from clear-cutting in Forest Park and putting a substation that would basically serve Intel's plants. So for me personally, I know everything is connected, and you know, the grand things, the federal things also impact us greatly, whether it's, you know, their attempts to destroy Medicaid or the Affordable Health Care Act or Social Security. But as one individual, I think I'm going to focus on groups here, and it's also important to protect our forests to ensure that people have health care. Also, it's really important for us to be strong. You know, we can't be effective if we're walking around all the time depressed. And, of course, we're affected by things, but we need to try to take care of ourselves and be strong. And part of that, for me, is besides participating in protests against Tesla or the Women's March or being, I'm on the city's Bicycle Advisory Committee. So coming together with like-minded people, you realize our strength, and I always feel energized when I'm with people who are trying to change the world for the better. Also, I have a habit of always talking to strangers. My father, may his soul be bound with the living, always taught me that every individual is a whole universe, and you could learn from everyone. So just talking to people, even the cashier at the store or the barista, when they ask, you know, how are you doing? And I never was able to say great if something terrible was happening, but I could reply, as I often do, you know, in my own little world there are many blessings, but I'm affected by what the neo-Nazis, the Nazis saluting pogromists in power are doing. So, and that usually leads to a conversation. And I feel, you know, I get a sense that so many people are worried and scared and anxious for good reason. And hearing, you know, even somebody just buying a cup of coffee say, you know, I share your feelings. I think about it. I care about it. I know I always feel good when that happens. So. Yes. Those are just some of the things that I wanted to share with you this morning, and I'll let somebody else. And also supporting our community radio.
Okay.
I co-host the bike show, and
yes.
As you know, KBOO is such a wonderful resource and news and strength. Also, I think it's always good to remember all those that came before us and fought for justice, you know, whether it's slaves rebelling, or people in concentration camps sharing their last piece of bread with somebody next to them. You know, we're part of a long chain of activists, of dreamers, of people who refuse to, you know, let the powers, those in power, destroy the world. So
yes.
I derive strength from reading and thinking about those, all those that came before us and those that will come, you know, with us and after us. So thank you so much for your good work.
Thank you so much for your work and for your words today, Elon. I appreciate it. Some of those suggestions that he gave is in terms of being strong, but how are we strong? He observed by taking care of self. Taking care of self, including coming together with like-minded people. You know, it is so easy to be discouraged, to be bombarded day by day by the impact of, as they say, the arsonist in power who seems to be destroying, putting fire to the house. But by coming together with like-minded people is a way to strengthen oneself and to realize that we are not alone, and that by talking to people, you know, simple things, talking to people, acknowledging the person around you, and also by supporting local endeavors such as community radio, ways in which people can get together and remain connected. Speaking about community radio, you know, I think it's important, and we can talk more about this at another time, but in terms of the potential attack of this administration on independent media and what that means and why it's so important to lift up independent community media, because it remains our voice, a place where we can speak to one another, not only like-minded people, but also people who are of different minds, different opinions. So continue to support one another. And lastly, what the last caller mentioned, I think is so important, is to remember that we are a community. We are a community. We are not alone. It may seem that way, but as that last caller reminded, it is important, I think, to reflect and to think of those who went ahead, those movements who, faced with insurmountable odds, continue onward, not sure of whether or not they would be quote-unquote victorious, but sure uncertain of the moral rightness of their cause and the need to lift up those who are most vulnerable. When we are able to do that, when we recognize that we descend from a long line of resistors, of communities who, faced with terrible situations, were able to come together and work together and challenge their communities, their world. Those are things that can inspire us and give us hope to build a better day. So yes, things are looking terrible. Things looking very bad, but we are reminded again and again this morning from the callers who shared that we are not alone and that we can continue to build and create community. So what are some of those ways in which you are able to build community, to support one another, and to acknowledge that, yes, it is difficult, but there are things that we can do. Before this show began, I was talking with the engineer again, and we were talking about, you know, education and how the importance of education, but particularly in terms of, remember when you were in school and you learned about the American experience, and, you know, we can hold off our judgment about whether the American experience is a success or not, or whether, but what we do know is that it is an attempt, a living attempt, a living organism of building community. And up until recently, you know, it has seemed to me that there has been a effort to expand the democracy, to expand possibility from, you know, the beginning of this American U.S. Society, where it began with those in power, white male landowners. And there are democratic experience saw the desire to expand what that meant in terms of who can participate in this building community. The expansion, the, you know, after decades, the dismantling of slavery, the gradual including of former those who had been enslaved, who were males, to participate in voting. The democratic experience began to expand, eventually expanding to include women to vote, and continue to expand to include various people. Up until recently, where we now see what seems to me a restriction of the democratic experience, and so we see a closing down. And so I think it is incumbent upon all of us, as our callers mentioned today, to say, no, this is our society, and this is who we are, and this is what we want to be. This is who we stand for. So whether it is, as a caller mentioned earlier, gathering with those around you and building a political power by organizing in revolutionary political circles, building political movements, those are one way in which we can acknowledge and recognize our power. Another caller reminded us that each person is in power because they are people to take action and make direct action by going and speaking to your neighbor, by registering people to vote, by attending community meetings, town hall meetings, by attending school board meetings, by running for political office. These are just some of the things that people are doing to expand democracy or to expand the experience of community. Let's hear what someone else has to say. Let's hear what Joss has to say. Good morning, Joss, and I appreciate you calling.
Hey, you still can you hear me okay?
Yes, you are coming across loud and clear.
Awesome. Yeah. I want to share my email with anybody. Santiago, if you're still listening and you want to get in touch with me, is that okay? Can I do that?
Yeah, yes. You're sharing it with everyone, but continue.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, anybody. Yeah, anybody's welcome. P is, it's P.S., the number 2, me. So that's P as in Papa, S as in Sam, the number 2, me. Mm-hmm. at post, P-O-S-T, E as in Echo, O as in Oscar, dot D-E, and that's German, so I'm going to read it again. P-S, the number 2, me, at post, E-O, dot D-E.
D-E.
And they're actually a really good non-Google, non-big tech email provider. It costs $12 a year, that's $1 a month for an email account. Postio, you can also go to if you just search for Postio, I wanted to say, you know, the second caller's notes about the first caller's notes, mm-hmm. Saying, oh, you know, he always talks, but, you know, where's the action? Well, it's not clear to me that Santiago has not been involved in action. In fact, I would surmise that he most likely has been involved in a lot of action. And I just want to say that that may be a misinterpretation on the part of the first caller, that, mm-hmm. that education, calling in and providing education, is somehow mutually exclusive to also being, you know, actively involved in the physical world.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for asking.
You know, the I think why education is so important is because we have to understand what the root causes of a problem are in order to fix it. Mm-hmm. Like, if we think that extreme weather events are caused by something at this point primarily other than human industrial activity and global heating, we're probably not going to be very effective in trying to deal with the problem. And similarly, if we think that the reason why global warming is still happening is because we just can't, you know, we're just lazy or stupid or whatever, as opposed to the oligarchs blocking us and sabotaging us at every turn, you know, we're also still not going to be effective because people are going to keep trying to reinvent greener, more sustainable technology instead of understanding the power centers that actively prevent it, like the real estate industry being completely in bed with fossil fuels for over 100 years, and how they deliberately, similar to gas mileage in automobiles, how they fight against tooth and nail, and this isn't widely known, against better building efficiency codes that improve insulation, so that, you know, in terms of power, I've kind of identified three areas that I think are at the heart of any type of political power and the foundation for it.
Okay.
And they all intersect with each other and with everything else. Just to be clear, I'm not saying these are all, right, you know, independent of each other. The first is control of land or real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about the history of private property versus, you know, not having, you know, like, right, indigenous peoples not, mm-hmm, not doing that. Mm-hmm. Although they still had territory. But so that's the first thing.
Control.
And the second thing I would say is obviously people need the power to enforce that. So police, military, you know, brute force. And the third is control of information or communication. And I would say that, so all of that could be categorized under economic power.
Mm-hmm.
And is the foundation for economic power. If we don't control our, if we don't own our own land, the landlords can jack the rent up or kick us off of it. If we don't control information, how do we organize or plan anything? And then obviously there's police and military. I would encourage anybody who's not already doing so to start listening to or just reading the transcript online of democracynow.org every day. It's aired here on KBOO at 7 a.m. and again at 4 p.m. If you can't make that, it's aired on X-Ray FM at 6 a.m. and noon. And there's a lot of really good analysis and interviews with experts about the, sure, you know, about what's happening, including, for example, the fact that the, something that was said is, you know, we're born thinking that, a lot of us think, we're told we have rights. Well, we don't have rights because we're born in this country. We have rights because there are courts and law enforcement that enforce the obligation of others to respect our rights.
Yeah. Hey, Josh,
and
we're running down on time, so
yeah, I just, yeah, the U.S. Marshals Service, one interesting thing I learned from Democracy Now!, the U.S. Marshals Service is actually controlled by the executive branch, not the judicial branch, and the U.S. Marshals are the ones who are tasked with the job of enforcing a court's orders. And what we've been seeing is that the Trump administration has been blatantly ignoring and disregarding court orders.
Yeah.
And then laughing about it.
Okay.
And people think there's still going to be midterm elections. People,
yeah,
think there's still going to be, you know, so I think it's kind of crazy to talk about elections. We need political power, and so that means,
okay, Josh,
we need control of real estate. We need to ensure
we're out of time.
Sold.
Hey, Josh, thank you so much. We're just running short on time, and I really appreciate what you had to say and some of your thoughts about power on control of land, control of police and military, and control of information. Before we go off here, I would just like to say and acknowledge the passing of Joe Uris. He was a friend and a mentor. And when I first came to KBOO, decades ago, Joe was the person who allowed me to sit in. And in fact, this same studio I'm sitting in right now. And he was trained me in terms of what we're doing. So I also remember I had a friend who said, when we were kids, we were able to go and pick berries out of his yard, and he let us, all the neighborhood kids, come in. So Joe Uris, we thank you for your work in Portland and in Oregon. Thank you for your service. You've been listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott, and we will see you next time.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience, KBOO, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings.